Welcome to Earth Matters. This is Donna Stevens, Executive Director of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance and your host for today's program on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU, at 89.1 FM. Today's show is about a few issues that affect national forests, and those issues are forest plan revisions, travel management planning, and more. Joining me here in the studio in beautiful downtown Silver City is Katie Davis, public lands campaigner with the Center for Biological Diversity based in Tucson, Arizona. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, Donna. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have you here in the studio. I wanted to start by talking about forest planning, which doesn't, on the face of it, sound super exciting, but it's really important. So I just wanted to give our listeners a little bit of background. Every national forest in the country has a comprehensive planning document that guides all the decisions they make throughout the year. The official name of these documents is the Land and Resource Management Plan, which is often abbreviated as LRMP, or simply the Forest Plan, which is what I'm going to call it just for simplicity's sake. And I want to read a quote from the Record of Decision. Quote, "This Record of Decision documents my decision approving a land and resource management plan for the Gila National Forest for the next 10 to 15 years. The forest plan will normally be revised in 10 years, but must be revised in 15 years. Revision means the entire planning process will be repeated and a completely new plan will be prepared," end quote. And that plan was signed in November of 1986, which is now 28 years ago. So planning revisions are way, way overdue.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. This plan is actually older than I am. Yeah. So if you think about how much has changed in my lifetime and we still haven't had an updated forest plan, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I was a procrastinator, but you know, this plan is way overdue. So, I mean, I think about all the documents and reports that just kind of busily gather dust in a warehouse somewhere. So I was wondering, Katie, if you could tell our listeners why forest planning even matters. What's so important about it?
Sure. Yeah, you know, there are quite a few government agency documents that get sort of gathered dust somewhere in a storage bin or somebody's files, and no one really looks at them. But the forest plan is actually something that is frequently looked at and frequently used, I would guess, for the Forest Service on a day-to-day basis. It has this forest plan, and all forest plans are occasionally amended as new things happen, usually due to a lawsuit that someone brings or significant change in agency policy. But basically, the forest plan dictates all of the Forest Service's actions on a national forest. And each one is different. Each forest plan for each forest is different, given they're in different areas, they have different issues, different community matters. But this really guides the vision, the future, what the Forest Service is able to do for more than a decade. So it's really important because if you think about all of the activities that people do on the forest, whether that's camping or hiking, or if you're a permittee that grazes livestock, or maybe you're an outdoor recreation company that takes tours and or hunters onto the forest, your activities are in some way restricted or have to fall within the guidelines of these forest plans. So it's really important for the communities that live around the forest, but also for visitors, tourists, and the Forest Service itself.
So what other kinds of issues are covered by forest plans besides the ones you just mentioned, like recreation and grazing?
There's quite a number of things. Pretty much anything you can think of that happens on a forest would be covered in the plan. So that's road maintenance, trail building, of course, any timber-related issues, fire management, recreational opportunities. So where is it appropriate to have hiking trails, equestrian trails? How are we managing wilderness? What about rivers and watersheds? How are those going to be managed? You know, all of these really important resource values on our public lands. And the Forest Service goes through almost everything you can think of and really lays out specific details, vision statements, guidance, things like that. So it's very comprehensive.
Mm-hmm. So will the revised forest plans need to add any new categories of management concern? Like, for example, I was looking at the 1986 forest plan a little bit to prepare for this interview, and it doesn't even mention climate change. I mean, most people weren't talking about climate change 28 years ago. So I was just wondering if there's any other issues like that that are really important, but that they just weren't on our radar screen almost 30 years ago.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of things. Obviously, climate change is huge. Drought sort of fits in with that. And that's a lot of things. That's something that a lot of the forest plans in the Southwest, the new ones moving forward, will have to deal with. There's also a few sort of specific new guidelines the Forest Service has to follow. So one of the things that they updated in how these plans are developed is sort of the scope of what you're looking at. Whereas before, it was really a species-focused approach. So you would look at one species or a few species and really plan for those. And the new guidelines really try to have an ecosystem-wide approach. So you're looking at interactions between species on a broader scale. There's habitat connectivity that you'll be looking at, which is a new sort of idea, as well as what they call species of conservation concern, which is a new concept. And that basically is something, you know, there's an acknowledgement that there's many species on these forests that may be threatened or endangered or may be sensitive in a specific area. And the Forest Service will have to identify those species and specifically plan to make sure that they are able to exist in the future on the forest. So those are a few of the things. There's also, of course, some just general federal guidelines that are now in place, such as environmental justice concerns. That's something that the Forest Service has to think about. So that's making sure that minorities or underrepresented groups are involved in the process and also that their concerns are reflected in the forest plan, which is something that has become more and more important as, you know, we've become a more diverse area in the Southwest.
Well, so you mentioned habitat connectivity. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yes, certainly. Basically, if you think about landscapes and the way that animals use landscapes, they don't recognize boundaries, right? So they don't. There's no political boundaries that are really taken into account by animals. And so when you look at a forest or multiple forests across a state, for instance, in New Mexico, you have the Gila. You also have the Cibola National Forest, which is sort of a bunch of sky islands. And many species, whether that's pronghorn or mountain lion or deer, et cetera, they range throughout those areas. And when you have management that maybe dissects that with roads or different grazing allotments or fencing or development, that's a huge problem for wildlife because they have to somehow navigate around that to migrate and follow their natural patterns. Mm-hmm. And so what we are really focusing on, you know, with the Center for Biological Diversity and also all of the partners that we work with in the conservation community, is making sure the Forest Service recognizes that those habitat corridors exist and making sure that it's managed so that the wildlife can move freely. Mm-hmm. And that's especially important as we look at climate change and the impacts that we'll have, because it's likely that as temperatures rise, as we have drought, habitats are going to shift. And if we don't have the room for those animals to move, it's going to be really difficult to maintain those populations in the future.
Right. Like as we get warmer in the Southwest, some animals have to move to higher elevations.
Exactly.
Plants as well, not just animals.
Exactly.
And they have to be able to do that. And there can't be these insurmountable barriers in their way.
Right.
When they need to move. Okay. So what about new protections for certain areas in the forest? Will forest planning result in more, say, wilderness designations or protections for other special places on the forest?
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. There's obviously a lot of organizations and, you know, citizens in New Mexico that love wilderness, that are very pro-wilderness. And there's areas on these forests, you know, and for example, on the Gila, there is already some wilderness areas that have been designated. But there's additional areas that, you know, have the characteristics of wilderness. And the Forest Service itself can't designate wilderness, you know, so you're not going to have a new wilderness area right away with a forest plan. That's a congressional action that has to take place. But what the Forest Service can do is identify areas, maybe expanding additional wilderness areas or even new areas on the forest that meet the qualifications for wilderness, and then they can be managed as such. So they would stop logging in those areas or make sure that there were no new trails or roads, things of that nature, to maintain its wilderness characteristics. So certainly a possibility and something that we'll, of course, be advocating for, because it's really important as we have a large number of people, an increasing number of people using our national forests, and things get degraded, climate change is happening and will result in shifts in the ecosystems, that we preserve areas, you know, untrammeled by man is what the sort of people think of wilderness. That's the legal standard. And so it's important that we preserve those areas for the future generations. And then also other sort of possible designations, for instance, wild and scenic rivers and things of that nature, which again is a congressional designation, but the Forest Service can identify areas and rivers in, for instance, the Gila National Forest that qualify because they have incredible recreation opportunities, or maybe they're very scenic, or they have specific habitat that's very important. And they can protect those areas by specifically putting in management standards that will maintain the existing qualities. So, yeah, through forest planning, it's certainly a possibility that we'll see more of those areas, and hopefully that will benefit everybody.
Yeah, we're going to talk about how citizens can get involved a little bit later in the show. But you were talking about wilderness and designating additional wilderness areas. And I was recently at the Wilderness 50 conference, a national conference that was held in Albuquerque, because New Mexico is the home of the first officially designated wilderness, the Gila Wilderness. And I kind of learned, it was a great conference, and I learned some actually fairly disturbing things there, which is that in certain wilderness areas across the country, there are certain structures that are actually being built for scientific research purposes, like weather stations, and then there'll be kind of little cabins that are built or little pit toilets. And I was actually rather disturbed to learn this, because here in the Gila, our wilderness areas are pretty, as you said, untrammeled, which is not the same as untrampled. It really means more like free, unrestrained. Like a trammel is a, what do you call those things, hobbles that horses are, you know, confined by when you don't want your horse to run away, although they can somewhat. So it was really disturbing to me to learn that some of our wilderness areas are being degraded. I mean, because we're not making any more wilderness areas. I mean, once they're gone, they're gone. And those wilderness areas are so important. So I'm really glad that this is something that forest plan revisions will be addressing.
The public input that the Forest Service seeks and the way that they've really focused new forest planning to capture public input, there's a lot of opportunities for people to actually specifically identify areas that they believe qualifies as wilderness. And we'll be doing a lot of work to sort of make, help people understand what those qualities are and how, you know, how they can advocate for those areas. But this is a really real opportunity for those who have specific areas they want to protect, and that can happen through forest planning.
Yeah, I've been doing a little bit of volunteer work actually with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance with Nathan Newcomer, who's the Gila grassroots organizer right here in Silver City, and just going out on these hikes and just looking at these different areas to see if they would qualify as wilderness. And it's a great excuse to get out there and just hike in some really, really beautiful places that I haven't been to before, because the Gila is so big.
Right.
So there really are opportunities for people to get involved in wilderness planning. So it's time for us to take a little break.
Okay.
And we'll be right back after this break to continue our discussion with Katie Davis here on Earth Matters on Gila Members Community Radio. Stay with us, please. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. If you're just joining us, I'm Donna Stevens, your host for today's program. With me today in the studio is environmental attorney Katie Davis of the Center for Biological Diversity, and we're continuing our discussion about forest plan revisions. So, Katie, I know that all the national forests in the country have to go through these plans, revisions, and I wanted to ask if there's other national forests in Region 3, which is Arizona and New Mexico, that have already started their forest plan revisions, and we haven't really started that here in the Gila, and I'm wondering if we can learn anything from what they've already done.
Yeah, certainly. So the new guidelines for forest planning came out in 2012. So we refer to them as 2012 regs or 2012 guidelines. That wasn't too long ago. And the last regulations were updated or put in place in 1985. So it was a significant sort of update in 2012. And the way the Forest Service decided to structure the forest plan revisions is to have, for the new regs, is to have a number of forests be quote-unquote early adopters. And so that was spread throughout the country. I think there's about 8 national forests total. And the Cibola National Forest is actually one of those early adopters. So they've been moving through this new forest planning process since about a year and a half ago, I think. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen a little bit from there. We can learn a bit specific to the Southwest of how things might go. It is a very long process. You know, 5 years probably is a good amount of time to sort of allocate in your head for how long this would take. So they're fairly wow. early on in their process still. And other forests in New Mexico, actually, all of them will be in some stage of forest planning this spring, we think, including the Gila. And so we'll be able to sort of track some of that process in other New Mexico forests as we go along. But we also have been in contact with people in California, for instance. There's 3 national forests there that are undergoing planning and are quite a bit ahead of where we are in New Mexico. And so we've been getting a lot of feedback from them as to how they're working with the Forest Service, how the public has been involved, things of that nature, so that we can learn from them moving forward here. And some of the things we've seen, there's obviously been an increase in the Forest Service's ability and also desire to have the public involved. So, for instance, they have early meetings before planning even really gets going to reach out to local communities. And so here I'm sure they'll have a meeting in Silver City and they'll invite everybody that they can gather through, you know, their outreach means, which are limited. I still don't think the Forest Service has done a good job of figuring out the best way to reach out to people and make sure they show up to these meetings and tell them why it matters. But there'll be opportunities for people to come and specifically talk about positives and negatives about how their experience with the forest or how they think the Forest Service is managing the forest. We'll also see a lot of opportunities for people to submit information. So, for instance, if you're a scientist who has done a lot of research on the Gila, you'll be able to submit that research to the Forest Service and make sure it's included in how they're looking at the forest and the information they have. We've also seen, unfortunately, some political sort of pushback from local communities. And that's true across the nation. There's been a lot of stories about that with, you know, travel management, we'll talk about later, forest planning, this sense. And I think a lot of it's driven by a sense, and especially in rural communities, there's been a strong sort of just push against the federal government generally. And the Forest Service obviously embodies that. And forest planning is sort of a bureaucratic process. And many people feel that maybe it doesn't represent their views or they're not adequately represented or their needs aren't being met. So that's something that I think the Forest Service has struggled with and trying to sort of ease their worries and make sure everyone's involved. But I think that's something we can definitely learn from here. We can anticipate that there will be people who don't feel like they're represented or don't feel like their needs are being met. And it's going to be important for us as a community and also for the Forest Service to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to speak. And while that may not everything that people want will probably not be reflected in the final plan, you know, it's certainly they're giving people more opportunity. And so we'll see how that works here. But that's something that we've obviously been dealing with across the country. And, you know, it's going to be a long haul. It's going to be a multi-year process. And keeping people engaged is going to be difficult, I think, for us, you know, making sure our members and people in the conservation community stay engaged, but also just the general public. You know, 5 years is a long time for people to be, mm-hmm. you know, involved in something or thinking about it. So we'll see how it goes. But, you know, we're learning a lot just from other forest planning in New Mexico and hopefully bring that to bear on the Gila.
Yeah, I know that you talked about travel management a little bit, and there's definitely been some pushback from the local community on that. And that makes me wonder how the forest planning revisions will go and if people will feel like their input is being heard. You said that scientists who were doing research in the forest could give information to the Forest Service, but suppose you're a person who's lived here your whole life and you know the forest pretty well. What types of information could people like that give to the Forest Service that would be helpful to them?
Sure. Yeah, I think that's really important. And that's something we really try to work on, is finding members in communities that live right next to the forest, or people who have visited the forest often over long spans of time, because they really have the best knowledge of what's happening on the ground. The Forest Service, unfortunately, has a lot of turnover. I mean, we see people work on a forest and then move across the country to work on another forest, or shift around even within the same state. So it's hard for them to have that institutional memory. So it's really up to community members to sort of put their information that they know and their experiences forward. And there's lots of ways to do that. I mean, it's as simple as, you know, taking photographs of certain areas that you want to see protected and showing why they're important or why they qualify for protections. If there's damage somewhere, for instance, if there was a illegal trail that was created and maybe the Forest Service doesn't know about it, mm-hmm. taking photographs of that, documenting that evidence, and then also just attending public meetings and talking about your story. And maybe, you know, you've been going to the same area for 10 years and you've seen positive or negative changes. That's the type of information the Forest Service wants. And I think a lot of people feel like they don't really have a voice in maybe what the federal government does, or maybe like they don't think that what they have to say is important. But really, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of Forest Service officials, and they want as much information and as many people as possible to input. So, I mean, I think you'll see on the Gila specifically, lots of hopefully press and advertisements advertising these types of public meetings and ways to submit information. And we'll be sending out things to our members, and I'm sure you'll be sending things to your members as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, any opportunity you have, even if it's just stopping by the district, you know, the ranger station and telling them something, that's, you know, you have plenty of opportunities to submit information. And it's just a matter of people taking the initiative to do so.
Yeah, I really hope that that happens, because in travel management, which I've been involved in for many years, it seems like there were a lot of people who came in kind of towards the end of the process and said, wait a minute, let's start over. Nobody's been listening to my voice. And I thought, well, where have these people been all these years? This has been going on for several years. And I thought, I work for a very small conservation group. And, you know, we don't have millions of members across the country, and we have a very small budget and only a couple of employees. And I thought, every time I call the Forest Service and ask to speak to them or have a meeting or just a phone call, I always get access. So I know that anyone can talk to them. I mean, that's their job. They're supposed to be public servants. And, you know, I mean, they do more or less a pretty good job at that. But I think what people need to understand, too, is that if you give input, that doesn't mean, like you said earlier, not all the information you give will be reflected
right.
in the final plan, because it's the Forest Service's job and kind of their moral obligation to take care of the forest.
Right. I mean,
that's their job. That's kind of the bottom line. But I really do hope that people will get involved in this, because it's important. And I don't want this to end up like travel management, where at the very end people are upset, or the county commissioners who weren't county commissioners when this first started are wondering how come they haven't had access. And I know they have.
Right, right, exactly. And, I think the Forest Service, generally, the people who work there understand that they are, you know, public employees, and they have a responsibility to the public. And most of them, I mean, they live in these communities, too. It's not
right.
like these are people in D.C. that fly in every once in a while. I mean, these
right.
people live in these communities. So
that's right.
I think there is, like, a real effort on their part to get people involved. Unfortunately, you know, they do sort of live in the constraints of the ways that they can communicate. And, you know, some of the Forest Service haven't picked up maybe on social media as well as maybe other organizations. And so it may be harder for them to reach some demographics. But I think it's really a matter, you know, people need to know what's going on the lands around them, and they need to get involved. It's just, you know, like other political movements and actions in your community. You just really have to make the effort to stay engaged.
And is the Forest Service mandated by any laws to have public involvement, like the NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act?
Yeah.
Does that pertain here?
It does. It does. So during the forest planning process, they'll go through the NEPA process. So there'll be many opportunities for public comment. And actually, the National Forest Management Act, which guides this forest planning, as well as the 2012 regulations we've spoken about, which come off of the National Forest Management Act, all talk about public participation and require public participation. And I think just generally within the Forest Service, there's been a move towards being more open, accessible, having more public meetings and more public interaction. So yeah, it's required for them to do that. And it's required that they do outreach and things. Of course, some of the ways, you know, in which they operate, again, are a little bit dated. For instance, when there are comment periods where anyone can submit comments and read these documents, a lot of times, maybe the only thing that will come out is a legal notice in the paper. And I don't know about you, but I don't spend all of my time reading the legal notices in actual physical newspapers anymore. So it's difficult, I think, for most people to sort of have a running tally of what's happening on the forest or sort of what the Forest Service is up to. And I think those things could be improved, but that's sort of a nationwide problem. But yeah, I think, you know, we'll see a lot of community meetings. And in a town like Silver City, especially, that's smaller and more connected, I think, than maybe, you know, Phoenix, for instance, I would hope that there would be more advertising and more community engagement than, like I said, in a larger city where people may have other interests or not really be thinking about the forest next door.
Yeah, I think the Forest Service has learned a lot, actually, from travel management planning, because at first they would have these huge meetings where people could kind of get up and grandstand and people would clap and boo. And I mean, those meetings got kind of rowdy and out of hand and they were very disturbing. And it seems like the Forest Service kind of learned that they needed to do a little bit better outreach and have a different format for their meetings. So they kind of went to an open house format where you had to get up and talk to somebody one-on-one. And so people had better manners and were more civil.
And, amazing how that works.
Yeah, and they didn't have a big audience to clap and boo, so they had to be decent.
Right.
And actually it was better because, you know, there was less demonizing of the other, and we actually talked to each other more like friends and neighbors.
Yeah, you know, and just sort of from what we've seen in New Mexico and then also in Arizona, and most of the forests in Arizona completed forest planning under the old regulations and are almost done. But I think the Forest Service has been learning from the process as they've gone along. One of the things that they've been using in Arizona, and I would anticipate they use in New Mexico as well, they take an organization that does collaborative workshops and things like that, and they really try to have the meetings facilitated and by an outside party.
Yes.
And that's helped a lot just in keeping people on track, avoiding that type of grandstanding situation, making sure that everybody has their thoughts heard or has an opportunity to speak. Things like that, I think, has really helped in making sure that these meetings stay civil and that everyone has an opportunity. And I hope that they continue doing that here. And hopefully, you know, Kelly Russell, the supervisor here on the Gila, has been through travel management and will, you know, probably see through forest planning. And so she'll sort of know what she's getting into, and hopefully they'll have learned a lot, through travel management, as you said.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, stay with us. We'll be right back with Earth Matters after this short break. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. I'm Donna Stevens, your host for today's show. And joining me in the studio is Katie Davis, public lands campaigner with the Center for Biological Diversity in Tucson. We're discussing Gila National Forest Protection. So we're talking about forest plan revisions. We just want to finish up with a few questions on that. And then we want to talk about travel management, the perennial favorite, and a few other things. So, Katie, we were talking about how the public can get involved and how the Forest Service has to follow laws to involve the public. Also, I wanted to ask you if it's appropriate for people who don't live right here in Silver City or surrounding areas adjacent to the Gila, if it's appropriate for people from anywhere, all over the country, say, to get involved in this process.
Yes, definitely. These national forests are public lands, and that's not public lands for people in New Mexico. That's public lands for everyone in America. And I think a lot of people forget that. They think, you know, that if a forest is somewhere in another state, you know, whatever, that's not where I go, maybe, or that's not in my community, so it's not that big of a deal. But really, it's incredibly important that people just in general stay involved in what the Forest Service is doing and how these public lands are managed, because they're being managed for all of us. And it's, you know, sort of our heritage and also the legacy we'll leave behind for future generations. And if we don't stand up and let our thoughts be known on how we think the Forest Service should be handling these lands, then you really are wasting an opportunity to get involved with what the federal government is doing. You know, unfortunately, we've seen in a lot of cases through forest planning and travel management planning and things like that, that some members of the local community feel that people not from that community should not have a say, that maybe they are not as interested or it won't affect them like it will the people who live there. But you have to think about, number one, these national forests are huge tourism generators. The Gila, specifically with the Gila Wilderness, generates a lot of money for Silver City and the surrounding areas. I think statewide, the last figure I saw was around $700 million from tourism to national forests. So that's, you know, it's a huge amount of money that's being pumped into the state, and it's one of the reasons why people come to New Mexico is the beautiful, you know, the land of enchantment, and a lot of people that means the beautiful mountains, the wilderness, the beautiful deserts, and things like that. And a lot of that is public lands. And so, you know, I think it's important that people realize that while you may feel ownership over these forests or these lands, that this is really land for everyone in America to enjoy and everyone in America to have influence on what is being done here. And it's really important that if you don't live in New Mexico, but you come here often or you have something to say, that you share that with the Forest Service, because they have to take everyone's comment into consideration, and it doesn't matter where you're from.
Well, I just want to say we are recording this show on November 4th, which is Election Day across the country.
It is.
Just a little plug for the public to get involved. I mean, I like to say that the world is run by the people who show up. And so showing up is voting. It's letting your voice be heard, whether you're talking about a forest in New York and you live in New Mexico or vice versa. You know, it's really important to speak up.
Exactly. And if you have a place that maybe you visit with your family or you visit with your kids or you visited before and you really care, you have an opportunity to say something about that. And you don't often have that opportunity to have your voice be heard. So I think it's an incredible opportunity for people across the nation and especially across New Mexico and in Silver City to make sure that the Forest Service knows what you think, because they are responsible to the American public.
Yeah, so just one more thing, and then I'll get off my soapbox here.
No, but go ahead.
I mean, it is a democracy, and it will only be one if we
exactly.
act like it is
right.
And, you know, speak out. So that's, you know, this is what democracy looks like.
Yeah, get
right?
out and vote, everybody.
So to get back to a little bit of the more wonky stuff about forest planning for a minute, what kind of timeline are we looking at? Is there any deadline when revisions have to be completed? I mean, obviously the 10 to 15 year timeline didn't mean very
right,
much.
Right, that's long past. Yeah, there hasn't been a deadline setting for these things to happen. With NEPA, with the public input, it often takes many years. And that's just a matter of, you know, the Forest Service staff is limited. They have other projects they have to do. Things come up. It will take a long time. We can anticipate, I would say 5 years is sort of the general benchmark that the mm-hmm. Forest Service has used and that we tell people, which is a long time. There's going to be a lot of steps. There's going to be a lot of opportunities for people to comment, a lot of documents that will come out. It's a long slog, but hopefully by the end of it, we'll have a much better forest plan than what we have now, and also a vision for the next 10 to, let's be honest, 30 years
right.
of how they'll manage this forest. And if you think about how much could change from now to 30 years from now, you know, that's a significant sort of strategic planning document. And that's sort of what it is, a strategic planning document. So it's going to take a while to put that together and make sure everybody has the input that they need and that they really have a final product that is sound and based on the best available science and forward looking.
So if the Forest Service wants to undertake a project, say a timber sale somewhere, or they want to, I don't know, fence a riparian area, do they have to look at the forest plan to see if that fits in with their stated
yes.
objectives?
It is. That's exactly what they have to do. And often that's what I do, is look at a project that's being proposed by the Forest Service, whether that is fencing a riparian area or a logging project or maybe a mining permit or something like that. And we'll look at what the forest plan says and make sure that they're are following those guidelines. It really is a legal document and something that they are forced to follow. And there's been many lawsuits specifically about that, a project that didn't follow the forest plan, or someone thought didn't follow the forest plan, and maybe they've had to go back and redo it. So, it's an incredibly important document, and it's certainly enforceable on each national forest.
So the Center for Biological Diversity, who you work for, has sued over different forests not
correct.
Following their own plan?
Yes, correct. Definitely.
Okay.
Lots of organizations, whether it's a timber company that will sue because they don't think it's right, or a conservation group, or off-road vehicle groups. Many people, I mean, a lot of people work on these forests. A lot of people are concerned about them. And all of those people will go back to the forest plan and look at what it says and make sure that's what the Forest Service is doing, including the Forest Service itself.
So it isn't just conservation groups that are litigating, which
no.
is what we often hear from critics.
Not it's, at all.
Okay, so it's big timber companies
mm-hmm.
and
mining like companies. Yeah, anyone who has an interest in the forest, you know, if their project doesn't go through or they aren't getting what they want, there's always legal avenues. And on forest, one of those legal avenues is, what does the forest plan say? And do I think that this project aligns with those standards and guidelines? So, yeah, certainly.
Well, that's good to know. It somehow never occurred to me that there were people on, quote, the other side of the issue suing over these things as well. I mean, we so often hear environmental groups criticized for being so litigious or, you know, frivolous lawsuits, that sort of thing. So I'm glad to know that it works both ways and that it's balanced out, at least theoretically.
Yes, there are lots of people unhappy with the federal government
right.
at any given time.
No shortage of complaints
there. Yeah, they really can't win sometimes. I don't necessarily envy their job.
I know. I've told them that, too. It's like, I understand that you're in a really tough position
yeah.
here. But, you know, when it's the Forest Service, really, as I said earlier, their bottom line is to protect the forest. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of like no matter what you do, someone doesn't like you.
Exactly.
Or doesn't like your decision anyway. Well, I wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about a topic that I've been involved in, an issue I've been involved in for a really long time, which is travel management planning. And there was finally some movement this year.
Correct.
And back in June, in the Gila National Forest, which is the only forest I really work on, but I know you work on others, the Gila finally released their record of decision on travel management planning. And I wanted you to just, for people who haven't listened to those other shows where we have talked about travel management before, if you could just give a brief summary of what it is.
Sure. Yeah. So travel management. Travel management is the Forest Service management of travel, and that also sort of equates to recreation on the forest. It's the system of roads. Forest Service roads on each national forest and the way that they maintain those roads, which roads are open and closed, where you can ride a vehicle or a bike, et cetera, on a national forest. That is travel management. And much like every forest has a forest plan, every forest has a travel management plan. And the two sort of intersect. They definitely feed off each other. But travel management is specific to roads and trails is basically mm-hmm. how I think of it.
Okay. The Gila released their decision earlier this summer. And what do you think of their decision overall? Are there any especially good or bad facets to their plan?
Yeah, we've seen basically travel management on all the national forests. There's been a lot of issues that we've seen both good and bad sort of across the board on these forests. On the Gila specifically, one of the things that we were really happy to see is closure of a road that went through and right sort of near the San Francisco River, which is a really important riparian area. There's lots of threatened and endangered species there. It provides excellent habitat, or could, so long as it's being protected. And so there was a road that went through that, and that was is closed in the travel management decision. Now, we have to wait and see sort of how that's enforced and implemented. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a huge part of this is implementation and enforcement moving
right.
forward. But that was a real a win that we had, our organization had been fighting for, and as well as yours, for mm-hmm. a long time. So that was great. We also saw some things that in the original sort of proposal we weren't excited about and that were pulled back, and maybe not to the extent that we would like them to be, but certainly there was some compromise there. For instance, on the areas where you can go to retrieve game, which off of the roads. And I believe it was 300 feet was the final decision. 300, right.
Yeah.
Which was not the sort of maximum that they could have gone with. And we've seen other forests where they've proposed a mile or more. So, you know, we're happy to see that have been stepped back because we really feel like that's it's important that people stay on roads and trails. That's incredibly important ecologically. And also, we just don't feel like there's an actual real need for that type of ability for people on the forest. So now some bad things that we've seen, and this isn't just relegated to the Gila National Forest, unfortunately, but we saw a lot of we see a lot of trails that are created by forest users. So maybe that's a couple of people on ORVs or, you know, Jeeps or just regular cars forging their own trails. Mm-hmm. And that's really, you know, when they create a road, the Forest Service creates a road, there's a long process they have to go through, and they seek public input. They have their scientists sort of go through it. They look for archaeological sites they need to preserve and protect. And when a forest user does that, or creates a road, none of that happens. And unfortunately, in these travel management decisions, the final plan will often incorporate those user-created roads and not do any site-specific analysis. So archaeological resources, riparian resources, aquatic resources, habitat are not really accounted for. And they just sort of look at a broad scale level where there could be serious impacts. And so we're concerned. We remain concerned, and that's all the national forests, that those roads are incorporated into the network of roads on the forest. And unfortunately, you know, I think the Forest Service is going to continue to incorporate those types of roads. But, you know, in general, our focus is on species and species habitat. And we really pushed for a thorough analysis of impacts to especially threatened and endangered species. And actually, the narrow-headed and New Mexican garter snake, which were recently listed, were not really analyzed fully in the plan. And the Forest Service is going to go back and relook at those impacts. And so that's great. And we anticipate, you know, moving forward with forest planning, that we'll continue to make sure that they're really adequately analyzing impacts to species and making sure they keep the populations sustainable.
Okay, so I have some more things to ask you about travel management, but we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. Stay with us, please. Welcome back to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. I'm Donna Stevens, your host for today's program. And joining me in the studio is Katie Davis, public lands campaigner and environmental attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity based in Tucson. So, Katie, I wanted to ask how you will remain involved with travel management moving forward from here, and what are the next steps for people who are interested in making sure that travel and recreation on the forest moves in a more sustainable direction moving forward?
Sure. So one of the things that we're really looking forward to is actually working with the Forest Service. Now that they have a plan in place, it's really important to make sure that, you know, maybe it's not exactly what we want to see, right? I mean, we're never going to get the exact perfect plan we want, but they have made a lot of steps in the right direction, and we're really looking forward to helping them figure out the best way to enforce and implement that. So, for instance, there were some areas that they closed, for instance, in the San Francisco River area that I spoke about earlier, and it's going to be really important that that's not just something that we see on paper, that it actually happens on the ground, because that's a hugely important habitat and ecological resource. And so we'll hopefully work with the Forest Service as well as people in the community to do outreach and education for both ORV groups, hikers, equestrians, to help make sure everyone understands what the new plan looks like and what that means and how they can follow the rules. And also making sure that on the ground, that the Forest Service is using the best tools to maintain the trails that exist, to fix those trails that maybe need some additional work, and to close areas effectively, which is hard to do oftentimes. You know, it's the Forest Service, I think, still hasn't necessarily figured out the best way to encourage people to follow the rules and to encourage people to stay on trails. So we'll be helping them work through that moving forward. And, you know, I think people who are interested in this can reach out to the Forest Service and maybe volunteer to do trail maintenance and things like that. The Forest Service obviously has limited resources, a limited budget, and they always love having people volunteer, whether that's citizens groups or just individual people. And of course, if you're a member of an organization like the Center or Upper Gila Watershed Alliance or maybe New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, you know, reach out to that organization and see if there's a way that you can get involved in the work they're doing. And then also in forest planning, you know, travel management decisions, of course, that plan is done. But there's additional steps in forest planning related to recreation and trail maintenance, and those issues will come up again. And so if you stay involved and there's specific things or areas you're interested in, as long as you can continue to communicate to the Forest Service and be proactive, you can really make a difference.
And I think even just people who aren't people who are just out recreating, if they see something out there, even if they don't feel like they're involved in a formal way with the Forest Service or implementation of travel management, that if they see somebody somewhere where they're not supposed to be, like driving off road, once travel management is implemented, that is, or if they see somebody driving in the San Francisco River, they could let the Forest Service know, you know, let their district ranger or the forest supervisor know that there's an issue and there's something that needs to be addressed here. And because, let's face it, the Forest Service people are mostly sitting in their offices. They're mostly not out on the ground as much as they want to be.
Yeah, so. Correct. Definitely. And, you know, I think it's important, too. I think most people don't want to break the rules and they want to follow the law. And it's really important to educate yourself. Maybe I'm being optimistic, but I think it's important to educate yourself. You know, what are the rules? Where can I go? Where can I park? Where can I camp? Things like that. It's important for you to know that. And also, you know, I think it's important to think, you know, is this something I would do on my own land or in my own backyard? And if the answer is no, then you probably shouldn't be doing it on the national forest. I mean, it's everyone's backyard in a sense. And it's really important that we all take the time to make sure it's that we clean it up, that we don't trash it, and that we're respectful of the community resource.
I think that's a really good point. You know, there's a saying like, drive it like you stole it, or, you know, drive it like it's a rental. Don't do that in the forest, you know.
Right.
Treat it like it's really your own place, because that's the only way that it's going to be there for our kids and grandkids.
Exactly.
So do you think that forest planning will impact any travel management decisions that have already been made?
It's possible. We haven't really seen on the new travel plans that have come into place, for instance, on the Santa Fe National Forest or the Carson National Forest. And we've seen a lot of the concerns with travel management resurface in forest planning. And there's, you know, a lot of that is, you know, when they implement the decision, a lot of that will be implemented. It's, you know, it was recently completed, so I don't think we'll see a lot of changes. But there are opportunities, you know, if they designate additional recreational opportunity areas, or they shift how certain areas should be managed, or if it's an equestrian trail or maybe an additional biking or hiking trail or something like that, there may be a few changes. And really, the forest plan is the guiding document. So if the travel plan, whatever the forest plan looks like, if the travel plan doesn't match up with that somehow, then they may have to amend the travel plan down the road. So there's, you know, opportunities for things to be worked out and for citizens to continue to stay involved. But we'll just have to see moving forward what, you know, the framework that the Forest Service wants to operate under and sort of what they're open to doing.
Well, I know that here on the Gila, when we met recently for our travel management appeal, when we met with Kelly Russell and Lisa Mizuno, the travel management coordinator and NEPA coordinator, that one of the things that came from that meeting was that they said when they come out with their motor vehicle use map, which is supposed to be the enforcement tool,
correct.
In other words, if you're wondering if a particular road is open, if it's on the map, then it's open. And if it isn't on it, then it's not a road, even if it still looks like one on the ground. But the Forest Service has also said, besides just that motor vehicle use map, which will be free, that people will be able, that they're going to do some additional educational materials so that it's really clear what the whole intent of travel management is and what the rules are, so that people won't, you know, won't be so confused that once it's actually implemented, and it hasn't been yet, that they'll know what they can and cannot do. And I mean, to me, I just think there's a lot of people who have been very upset about travel management planning and I mean, I think, well, there's rules, you know, in such a big country with so many people, there have to be rules. Otherwise, it would be complete chaos and confusion and anarchy. And most of us follow traffic laws because otherwise we'd be killing each other right and left. And so, I mean, we have to also follow laws in the forest. And so I'm hopeful that people will do that and that they'll adjust to the fact that they have slightly fewer roads to drive on, but they can still use the entire forest if they just get out and walk.
Yes, there's a lot of access, lots of opportunities for people to drive around, to reach trailheads, campsites. You know, there's a lot of opportunities. And so that's, you know, huge to reiterate that. And also, you know, just to go back to forest planning, one of the things that will be important is the goals that the Forest Service sets for itself. So, for instance, with travel planning, they may have slated certain roads to be closed or decommissioned or restored in some way, or, you know, a specific maintenance or improvements that were going to be made. And a lot of that will be based on what the forest plan says, you know, how many roads they'll decommission, how many miles of trails, things like that. So it's going to be important to make sure they really follow through with that through forest planning.
So I wanted to ask you, we only have a few minutes left in the show. What are some of the other big issues that we haven't talked about yet that will be facing the Gila National Forest and other forests in the state for the next 10 to 20 years?
Yeah, so there's a few big ones. I think water issues are specifically very important in the Southwest. You know, we face drought, climate change. There's going to be a shift in how much water is available, and that has significant consequences for local communities and agriculture and livestock grazers. And, you know, we have a limited resource, and we all have to share it. And so that's going to be really important moving forward. And if you think about the reason national forests were set up, part of it was the timber, you know, values, but also it was hugely about watersheds and preserving and protecting water. All of our water, for the most part, comes from a forest somewhere and flows down. And so making sure that we're protecting watershed values, that we're really planning for water uses and, you know, how many people will be needing this water, as well as what fish and wildlife need, because, you know, a lot of those fish and reptiles and wildlife have very specific needs, you know, for instance, what the temperature of a river is. And if you have, you know, too much water being diverted, maybe it throws off the temperature enough to wipe out those populations. And so it's really going to be a challenge for everyone moving forward to make sure our water resources are protected in the face of climate change and drought. I think also we're going to see some shifts just in the way that communities are structured and sort of community values. I think there's been a general shift away from intensive uses on forests, for instance, timber production, livestock grazing, mining, et cetera, to more of a recreational values. And a lot of the rural communities that maybe were based on agriculture or ranching or resource extraction in the past are now shifting to recreation and recreation communities and really vibrant local communities who want to get out and use the forest for hiking and biking and using their horses and things like that. So I think that's going to be a major just sort of demographic shift, and we're going to have to deal with that on our national forests in New Mexico. And finally, I think just wildlife species and making sure that we're planning and sustaining populations moving forward. For instance, in New Mexico, the Mexican gray wolf has been established in small population, experimental population here in New Mexico. And that may, depending on what the Fish and Wildlife Service does moving forward, expand. And if we're going to really maintain that type of really important critical species on the landscape, as well as other raptors, birds, reptiles, fish that are sort of hovering on the brink of extinction, we're going to have to really make a concerted effort to plan accordingly and to really put in place the best conservation measures. So I think those are sort of the three big shifts and challenges that we face moving forward, and they're going to affect everybody in some way or another. So it's going to be important that people stay involved and that we all sort of take a step to make sure that we're planning for 30 years down the road, 100 years down the road, and not just let it go.
We don't have much time left. I want to make sure I ask you this question, because this is a kind of a big concern of mine. A lot of the people in the conservation movement here locally are, shall we say, approaching being seniors or are seniors. Trying not to include myself in that demographic yet, but the reality is starting to hit home. So I wanted to ask you, Katie, if you have any ideas for how we can get younger people involved and build the next generation of engaged citizens.
Sure. Yeah, that's a challenge. And I think it's a challenge for lots of people. And also the Forest Service is getting younger people involved. You see these public meetings, and it's a lot of older residents who have been involved for a lot and are very committed, but not a lot of younger people. And I think it's important for conservation groups to make sure they're engaging youth, whether that's through events and activities or through internships. There's a lot of college students and graduate students who are looking for work that's a challenge for people these days. And a lot of those people really care about the environment and they really want to get involved. And even if they're not getting paid, they want to help out. And so I think it's important for groups to understand that and to really try to make that happen. And also just, you know, for younger people to actually take the initiative, because I think it's easy to just stay at home and work on your computer and maybe try to make action happen that way. But it's really important to get out on the forest and get out on the ground and really try to make something happen.
Well, I think getting out on the ground is actually much more inspiring than sitting in front of your computer screen anyway, because, you know, you're like, oh, this is what I'm working to protect.
Right.
And, you know, but that's what inspires you, not just looking at your screen, as entertaining as that can be. Well, Katie, I want to thank you so much for joining me here in the studio today. And I know that we're going to be talking more in the future about forest planning, because it's a big deal and a multi-year deal, as you've said. And do you have any last thoughts, just really quickly, that you need to?
No, just thank you for inviting me on. And I look forward to visiting Silver City again in the future and really working with the local community on forest planning and other forest issues.
Great. Thank you for joining us. And I want to thank our audio engineer and the Kuru Guru, Kyle Johnson. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this week's program. I'm Donna Stevens. Please join us next week for another edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Mimbres Community Radio. This is what community radio looks and sounds like.